Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where with 13 games left in the Lakers season, as the team tries to shift gears from their post-All-Star break malaise and ramp things up, the injury bug unfortunately continues to shit tears, or tears, like meniscus ones, all over the Lakers playoff push plans. I have no idea what any of that means, but with the King looking more and more locked in, with D'Angelo Russell primed to seize the title of most prolific Lakers three-point shooter in franchise history, and with AD now able to actually see out of his left eye again, there may be a faint glimpse of hope yet. But only if Vando returns. So the Lakers took care of business last night versus the trailless Atlanta Hawks, beating them 136-105. AD, LeBron, D'Lo all scored 20-plus points. D'Angelo Russell and LeBron James both had 20-plus point 10-assist games, which is pretty incredible, and a late D'Angelo Russell heater to end the third and enter the fourth, capped off by a one-legged teardrop three to close the third quarter out, inevitably took the Lakers home, as D'Lo would go on to hit four out of his last five threes in just under 3 minutes to tie Nick Van Exel for the Lakers' single-season record for three-pointers made at 183 three-pointers. He'll look to be number one in that historical statistic when the Lakers take on the Sixers on Friday. So congrats to D'Angelo Russell, the greatest pure three-point shooter in Lakers franchise history. The Lakers are now 37-32. They are a game and a half behind the eighth-place Suns. They are 2 games behind the Mavericks, since the Mavericks hold the season tiebreaker versus the Lakers. And they are also 3.5 games behind the Kings in sixth place. Yesterday, we also found out the unfortunate news about Christian Wood needing to undergo knee surgery. Christian Wood will now be out about 4 weeks or so. There are only 3 weeks left of the regular season, so that's looking incredibly dicey, and Christian Wood may never actually end up making the playoffs after all in his career, even if the Lakers advance past the play-in. Cam Reddish is probably the player set to return the earliest out of the Lakers' injured brigade, while Jared Vanderbilt and Gabe Vincent are continuing to ramp things up in practice, although we did get a report out from Bill Reiter of CBS Sports saying that Gabe and Vando may miss the rest of the season. So who knows where things actually stand in terms of the Lakers players' health. All that to say, there's a lot going on right now in Lakers land, and there's still a lot for the Lakers to figure out with their remaining 13 games. And fortunately or unfortunately, the Lakers will continue to have a lot of time this week to sort things out because they do not play again till Friday. On today's show, we are going to be talking about the Lakers' lineup rotations and how things will play out if and when some of the injured dudes make their return. And then for the last part of our episode, we shall reserve that section for Mr. Rui Hachimura and give him a little bit of shine for his underrated play this season. So with that lay of the land preamble out of the way, again, welcome to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, how are you doing? How's your sleep cycle these days?
It's great. Thank you for asking. Nobody asked me about that.
Do you track your sleep cycle, by the way? My fiance does because she's trying to be healthier, and apparently sleep is the number one factor in determining a person's lifespan, health, etc.
I knew that. I'm not down to like the tracking the cycles yet, but I definitely try to get my sleep for sure.
Apparently you can also track your erection during sleep, and that is an indicator of how healthy you are as you age, which is crazy. Anyways, I don't know how we got there.
I am very healthy then, is what you're saying.
Oh, okay. All right. How about this for a better non-basketball related icebreaker question? More appropriate icebreaker question. So with the Lakers off till Friday, Tommy, the fans will likely need something to help them stem the tide. And I like to do this occasionally throughout the season. But Tommy, let's give the fans our updated TV binging recs that they can turn to in order to pass the Lakers' time. So have you been watching anything new on TV lately? Anything new and exciting? And if so, what have you been watching? I'll take that as a no.
Yeah, honestly, I have not had time to start anything new recently. Oh, no, you know, the only thing I've been watching is the new season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, the final season of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say Love is Blind season two, because that's what everybody's watching. Okay, so the next show that you need to watch, more serialized narrative show, it's on Amazon Prime, but definitely check out Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Donald Glover.
Dude, you're like the fifth person who's told me I should watch that.
It is so good, yeah.
Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's like, if you've ever watched any of Donald Glover's stuff, like Atlanta, it's like the Atlanta version of like Mission Impossible or that other FX show, The Americans, about Russian spies or whatever. But really, it's like it's a funny, quirky relationship show thinly cloaked as a James Bond action thriller, but throughout the episodes, you're on the edge of your seat, but also kind of laughing, and it's also kind of endearing, and you're going through different stages of a relationship with these two people. So very good take on the Mr. and Mrs. Smith movie with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. So check out Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Amazon Prime. Check out the latest season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, because we've got a lot of time till Friday. Okay, lastly, final house cleaning item of the day for this podcast before we get to our discussion on the Lakers' injured players, their return dates, and what future lineups will look like. It is time for our Apple Podcast rating and review reading of the day. As I mentioned in the last podcast, per usual, we will be having Tommy Alexander, our impressionist extraordinaire, read us our review of the day. So Tommy, today I would like you to channel the only remaining traditional center on the Lakers roster currently in Mr. Jackson Hayes. So whenever you're ready, Jackson Hayes, take it away.
This review is entitled Laker Fan Until I Die by Roger Izaguirre. I don't know how you say that.
That's pretty good.
These fellows have the ability to talk basketball in a way that's simple and easy to understand. They're always friendly, and I definitely respect their opinions. 5 stars.
Nice. Thank you, Roger Izaguirre. I think that's how you pronounce it, but thank you for the lovely review. We're glad that we come off as friendly. Tommy, that was absolutely impeccable, the way that you were able to channel Jackson Hayes. May I ask you now how you were able, what went into your channeling of Action Jackson right there?
I was just, you know, I don't know, man. I was just trying to think of like a situation where I was, you know, an athletic big man sitting on the bench most of the year, recently got a chance to get back into the rotation. How would I feel about that while I was reading the review? And that's what I went with.
Very nice. I could really feel those vibrant, bouncy curls of his bobbing up and down as you were reading that review. It was perfect. So yeah, if you guys could please give us a 5-star rating and review on the Apple Podcast app, or give us a 5-star thumb tap at the top of our page on the Spotify platform, we would greatly appreciate it. All right, so let's get into the basketball side of things. Quick injury update, lay of the land. As I mentioned at the top of the show, what we know definitively right now is that Christian Wood is set to undergo knee surgery and will be out for the next 4 to 6 weeks or so. The Lakers haven't released a specific timetable for him, but from what I've seen from other doctors commenting on this injury and surgery online, apparently this is like at least a 4-week injury. Now, the NBA regular season ends April 14th. That's in about 3.5 weeks. So best case scenario, Christian Wood maybe makes it back in time for the first round of the playoffs if the Lakers make it that far. So yeah, this is just very unfortunate news because the Lakers really needed Christian Wood's offensive versatility. But even more than that, the Lakers have really missed Christian Wood's great rebounding skills and acumen. And unfortunately, the Lakers really can't do much of anything to replace Christian Wood's production. Even if he's deemed out for the season, the cutoff date to apply for the NBA's disabled players exception, which would have allowed the Lakers to go outside of the salary cap and sign an additional veteran player, the cutoff date for that exception was January 15th. So that's over and done with. They can't avail of that exception. So if the Lakers want to sign an extra big man who is playoff eligible, they can't do that without cutting Christian Wood himself. Except Christian Wood has a player option for the vet minimum next season, and the Lakers would be losing out on his services next year if they cut him, and they'd also have to eat the cost of that player option, which wouldn't be ideal on all fronts, but who knows, maybe it's necessary if they're really in need of a big man between now and the playoffs. Now, the Lakers can also cut Cam Reddish or Jackson Hayes, but we kind of need those guys, and both of those players also have player options. Lastly, the Lakers can also look to cutting one of their rookies, Jalen Hood-Schifino and Maxwell Lewis, but that would be kind of unprecedented and unlikely. So essentially, the Lakers are kind of stuck. They will need to rely more heavily on Jackson Hayes and Rui Hachimura to uphold their front line. Maybe we'll actually get some sprinklings of Harry Giles to give us some athletic burst in the regular season as well. So hopefully Darvin Ham starts to play him a little bit more. And then hopefully, the biggest hopefully here, is that Jared Vanderbilt really does return soon. Now, in the unlikely event that the Lakers actually do cut Christian Wood, the buyout market for bigs is still very, very thin. You're looking at guys like Nerlens Noel, Myers Leonard, Tony Bradley, and Chimezie Metu. Of that group, I would probably trial out Myers Leonard because he's one of those beefier, chunkier centers who just takes up space in the paint and he can space the floor a little bit. So I would try out Myers Leonard. And then after that, I would look at a guy like Chimezie Metu, who kind of fits that Christian Wood sort of build. He's a little bit frail though and not one of those bulkier centers. But yeah, I would look at Myers Leonard and Chimezie Metu if the Lakers do end up cutting Christian Wood, surprisingly. So what we do know right now is Cam Reddish is probably going to be back the earliest as soon as this Friday against the Sixers. Then it'll probably be Vanderbilt in the next week or two, and then maybe Gabe Vincent. Hopefully this time around, when Cam Reddish does return, he can actually keep his ankle in check and play through games in one piece without doing this in-and-out line dance of playing one game and then being out the next game with ankle soreness because it flared up, etc., etc. But yeah, we're going to need Cam Reddish because even with how solidly Max Christie has been playing, and he almost had his career high in points last night as well, even with how solidly Max Christie has been playing, we've seen that against teams like the Kings and the Warriors, the Lakers defense, especially with these small, shifty athletic guards, the Lakers defense has really missed Cam Reddish's mobility and length on that end of things. So with that murky and unfortunate injury update out of the way, Tommy, let's talk about the Lakers lineups. Full disclosure, Tommy and I recorded this segment on lineups before the Christian Wood surgery news came out, so you're going to still hear us talk about Wood as part of our future rotational plans, but obviously that is now a huge asterisk TBD, so just bear that in mind as you listen along. Now, as for the immediate Lakers lineup, Tommy, with Cam Reddish set to return, how do you have the Lakers' 7-9-man rotation shaking out? Do you even have it at a 9-man rotation currently? When Cam Reddish does return, does he fully supplant Max Christie? Or should both of them play? Because for me, if Cam Reddish's ankle is finally healthy, I think he needs to be in the rotation as our one-for-one Vando proxy until Vando returns. But yeah, in the here and now, with Wood, Vando, Gabe still shelved, how do you have the Lakers' rotation panning out with Cam back in the fold?
So I stick with like the same starting five. I mean, like, okay, so yeah, assuming all those things you just said, right? I stick with the same starting five. I think you have to find minutes for all of Torian Prince, Cam Reddish, Jackson Hayes, and Spencer Dinwiddie. I think Max is maybe the odd man out in this scenario. I mean, look, if you've really gun to my head, you told me I have to choose between Max and Torian Prince, I would choose probably Max. But yeah. I think Torian Prince is, he's too ingrained in the culture and identity of this team at this point. I mean, it's fine. He's still a solid player. So he just needs to not be playing too much. But if we can like take these Torian minutes, like Rui should be playing 30. I feel like Austin, those minutes could come down a little bit. D'Lo, you know, he's a vet. LeBron, AD, those D'Lo, LeBron, and AD are the only three I'm not going to pay attention to their minutes because I expect that they should be getting like legit NBA starter like 35 minutes a night. Rui, you know, I want him around 30. Austin, he's been trending too far up to the mid-30s. I'd like to bring him down a little bit. And then Cam Reddish, Torian Prince, I'd split their minutes. Jackson Hayes, I'd like to continue to see him get, you know, 10, 11 minutes a night. And then Spencer Dinwiddie, obviously, as like the third guard.
Yeah, I agree with you. It sucks because you know how the debate amongst fans earlier on in the season was always about Max Christie versus Cam Reddish, right? I feel like now it's Torian Prince or one of these guys because it sucks that there is a reality, Tommy, where you've seen how this team works and functions best, and it's when you surround LeBron James and our skill guards with athletic young legs with activity. I don't necessarily characterize Torian Prince as that, and so If you can have Cam Reddish serving as that Vanderbilt analog while Vando's out, and then pair Max Christie with him, and then Jackson Hayes on top of that, I just feel like that's such a burst and boost of energy that and athleticism, actually, that it just sucks that we have to always pen in Torian Prince there when I feel like he should be the situational player. And it shouldn't be Max Christie. I understand that when it comes time for the playoffs, you need that veteran savviness and experience. But honestly, these days, I feel like that's overrated. And I don't know. I just wish that we would take Torian Prince's 16 minutes because he hasn't even really been hitting threes anymore, you know? So I'm like, what does he do if he's not doing that? Max Christie at least is providing that elite perimeter defense at the shooting guard position and rebounding.
We're not going to get too sidetracked on Torian Prince because we do it all the time and we're not going to let you guys bait us. But, you know, Torian Prince, these fake people talking to me in my head are baiting me to talk about Torian Prince. Torian Prince is like not a bad player. Here's the thing about Torian Prince. He's like, the thing that's the most appealing about him is he's like league average at many things. Okay. And it's hard to get guys who are just like all around pretty good. Like he can put the ball on the ground a little bit. He can shoot a little bit from the perimeter. He can play a little bit of defense. He's got like a little bit better length than you would expect. Like all of these, he's not elite in any of these categories, but like he can do a little bit of them. But the problem is, to your point, like when you have offense on the floor and the thing you need is defense, Torian Prince is not better than Cam Reddish, Jared Vanderbilt, or even Max Christie or Gabe Vincent. He's not better than any of those four guys as a perimeter defender. So why would you play him for defense? He's not better than Rui Hachimura or Spencer Dinwiddie as an offensive option. So why would you play him over any of those guys as an offensive option? His sole role is to be an extra depth piece who's not an unplayable player. Like most guys don't have 8, 9, 10 guys who are as good as Torian Prince. That's his value to this team. But we play him as like our sixth man. It's like completely insane. I mean, like for a while he was our third man. But like, you know, for So we're trending in the right direction, but like that's how we're using him, and it's kind of ruining the it's kind of hurting things. I shouldn't say ruining.
It's like our ceiling could be so much higher than it is, and we're like purposefully, I don't know what the psychological term is, but it's like we're purposefully handicapping ourselves or sandbagging ourselves with like promising Taurean Prince 15 minutes a game. But I think you'd agree, given the fact that that is probably going to be the staple, our nine-man rotation as it stands is AD, LeBron, Rui, D'Lo, AR, Dinwiddie first guard off the bench, Taurean Prince, Jackson Hayes, and Cam Reddish. But sometimes you could probably situationally switch Cam and Max, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how it stands right now. And assuming the Bill Ryder report about Vando and Gabe Vincent being out for the rest of the season isn't 100% accurate and that they are also on their way back, what are your thoughts on what we do with Jared Vanderbilt? Because I do think he's going to return this season. Whether he returns and operates at 100% the rest of the way through is another question. I think at this point we just have to assume that Vanderbilt will... that we're only going to be getting a 70% version of Vanderbilt, even if he's able to play in the playoffs. But assuming that Jared Vanderbilt is on his way back in the next 2 weeks or so, he is clearly the most important missing piece to the Lakers' defensive identity. Jackson Hayes has called him the heart and soul of this team. But yeah, what do you think we should do with Vando once he returns? It kind of sounds like an obvious question, but whose minutes is he now taking? A bigger question would be after we ramp Jared Vanderbilt up after a few games and provided everything looks good and he doesn't relapse in any sort of way with his injury, should we then shuffle the lineup again and inevitably insert Jared Vanderbilt back into the starting lineup and then bring Rui off the bench? Or will that be too much tinkering again and mess up our collective flow at that point? But yeah, where do you stand on Jared Vanderbilt's potential return and what the Lakers will inevitably do with him and how big of a role he's going to have upon his return?
So the trickiest thing of these guys coming back is figuring out what to do with Vanderbilt, in my opinion, because I think you could make a really strong argument that for a 48-minute game, it's better to set a defensive tone in the first quarter than it is to set an offensive tone. Like, we've had so many of these first quarters. I mean, even against the Wizards, we'd scored 31 points and we lost the quarter by three, you know, so against one of the worst teams in the NBA. So, you know, we have shown that we can like put the points on the board when we need to do it. I think there is some benefit to not letting these like Corey Kisperts, Jordan Poole, these types of random guys get hot in the first quarter and set themselves up for the whole game. And I think there's a decent argument then you just go with Vando. I'm a little concerned about how that impacts Rui's minutes because he's been so good for us. But I think the casualties here are probably, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie and probably, you know, Cam Reddish. I guess when Vando comes back, or maybe Rui, a little bit of his minutes get cut. But I think Christian Wood and Spencer Dinwiddie are going to be the two guys who end up just not playing as much. Christian Wood, maybe situationally, like with Jackson Hayes, he can be another look. Spencer Dinwiddie, I think, again, situationally with Gabe Vincent, he could be another look if we need more offense, less defense type of thing. But I have zero faith in Darvin's ability to like manage any of this. So it's kind of like a sad conversation to have, because it's like all this depth should be a good thing. And I understand there is this element of you can have too much talent at certain positions and thus guys can't get into a rhythm. But I don't think that's the issue with this team. Again, going back to what we said from the beginning of the season, this team's strength is not that we're 1 through 4 better than you. This team's strength is that we're 1 through 10 better than you. And these guys like Vando, Cam Reddish, Taurean Prince, like defensive guys, role player guys, like it's almost like if we just like put them into that role, you think of like the 08-09 like bench mob, like those guys knew what their role was, right? They came into the game and they were going to be in there for 12 minutes and they were going to like bust their asses and they were going to play really hard. And that's what we want. We don't need Taurean Prince out there pacing himself. We don't need Vanderbilt and Gabe Vincent when he comes back and Cam Reddish and these types of guys like pacing themselves. They should be in, going into these games with the expectation of this might actually be the only time you play. And so go out there and give us 8 minutes of the most elite defense you've ever played in your life. That kind of attitude is going to win us, you know, games in the playoffs. And I just don't know if we're going to get there with the way that we've managed rotations all season.
Yeah, I think when Vando returns, do you agree with me? I don't know if you explicitly answered the starting lineup question, but would you do you agree with me that we stick to the Rui lineup and then have Vando off the bench to provide that defensive athletic spark? And I actually think having Vando and Dinwiddie come off the bench, you can sort of mix and match the offense and defense type stuff, you know? So I think I would stick to what we have now and just have Vando kind of absorb all of Cam's minutes. I kind of view Cam Reddish in the meantime as the one-for-one Vando analog. And when Vando's here, you kind of don't need Cam, even though in an ideal world, it would be fun to see Cam and Vando out there instead of Prince and Vando. But yeah, I think first three guys off the bench are going to be Vanderbilt, Dinwiddie, and Prince, with some sprinklings of Jackson Hayes slash Wood. Do you agree with me that the guys who get phased out, I think obviously Vando will take some minutes from Dinwiddie, but I think the pure situational guys will be Hayes and Wood. You can interchange those guys based off of the matchups and what you need. And then Cam, Max, and Gabe. I don't know how that's going to work when Gabe comes back, but those to me are the pivot points of who's going to be situational game in, game out, depending on what the team needs. Because Hayes on one night, I feel like you could make an argument that Hayes should always be playing, should always have a role because of how integral he's been to the activity and energy of the team. But I also think Christian Wood is the better rebounder, like when he's healthy. Like, I think his rebounding and spacing slash offensive versatility is useful in certain situations. Christian Wood, I'm talking about. Particularly when teams force us to go small, because with Christian Wood, we can go smaller while still maintaining size because he's still skilled and can space the floor. Jackson Hayes is more of an energy rebounder, but Wood is the savvy, functional, like foundational rebounder who knows how to read angles and use his length to snatch up balls and stuff. And then, yeah, the guard rotation is kind of self-explanatory with Cam and Max. Use Max on, well, I don't know. Maybe it's just going to be Cam all the way through. But if his offense is not clicking or he's doing stupid stuff, then you go with Max Christie. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the situational guys and whether you think that's actually going to happen? In an ideal world, Darvin Ham really grows as a coach, Tommy, and Vanderbilt's minutes come purely from Torian Prince. But we're not going to give him the benefit of the doubt. So having said that, what are your thoughts about the Hayes-Wood rotation and the Cam-Max-Gabe rotation?
Yeah, the Hayes-Wood rotation, I think, is just going to be night to night. There's going to be nights that one of those guys just straight up doesn't play. So maybe that's like a little bit easier. I think the other, the Gabe-Max, I mean, it's just like we have to decide whether we want to try to play the guys that we signed and, you know, the guys who returned and the new guys we signed. Do we want to put those guys in the positions that we intended them to be in when we made those decisions? Or do we want to go with who's played this year, if that makes sense? Because I don't think we signed Cam Reddish thinking he was going to be a 25-minute-a-game guy, right? And he did that because of a variety of reasons, mostly injuries. Obviously we thought Vando was going to be a bigger part of the team this year than he has been, and he hasn't been able to because of injuries. Gabe Vincent was supposed to be a pretty big part of this team, and that was before like Spencer Dinwiddie was even contemplated. So like, how are we going to balance like these new guys we've added, you know, from the offseason and Dinwiddie during the season with the guys that we kind of thought were going to be our guy? I honestly don't know the answer. And this is why I'm kind of a little bit nervous about when these guys start to come back, what's going to happen. Because to me, I can see minutes that can be pulled from guys. I can see like Austin can maybe take a little bit less, you know, Torian Prince can certainly take a little bit less. Spencer Dinwiddie might just end up getting mostly cut out if Gabe comes back and is like effective, because we probably need more defense most nights than we will need offense at that position. So anyway, but I'm still nervous about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think this team just needs more of those connector type pieces of guys who have really bought into being role players. And I've never actually brought this up, and not to bring this back around to Torian Prince, but Torian Prince, outside of Spencer Dinwiddie, is actually the only guy, Tommy, on this team who's expiring and actually playing for his next contract. And I feel like he's sort of plays that way, if that makes any sense. It feels like out of all the role players, even though he's done role player-y things, like the reason why he attacks these closeouts so much, the reason why he's ISOing and at times like taking guys off the dribble, to me, this may just be from my point of view, it just feels like Torian Prince is pressing for his next contract. And of the other guys, like Cam Reddish, Jackson Hayes, Christian Wood, these guys actually have player options for next year. Granted, it's on the vet minimum, but would you agree with me that those guys seem to have bought into their roles better and actually been okay with being DNP'd, and when their number is called upon, jumping straight back into things?
Yes.
Yeah, so that to me is where the world would be a much better place, Tommy, if Torian Prince was just DNP'd. But anyways, I don't want to go that far, but that's just something I want to put into people's minds, where Torian Prince and I feel like Darvin Ham have been in cahoots to try and get him his next contract, because he got cut from his $7 million contract with the Wolves. And the Lakers signed him to the biannual exception of $4.5 million. And I think Torian Prince is worried about his next contract. And it's a tough situation to juggle, because Max Christie is also expiring, and the Lakers need to figure out what to sign him to this upcoming offseason. And maybe some would argue that, well, it's good because he's not really, you know, exploding anywhere or showing too much, so maybe the Lakers can keep him cost controlled. But we're in a win now situation, and the Lakers just need to play the best and most effective lineups out there who will bring the most energy and will complement their stars and their skill guards the best. And we've seen it's come more from the guys who have played like role players and accepted that role than the guys who still think that they should get some usage and show off a little bit of something something. But yeah, that is for Darvin Ham to handle, and we will see how he sinks or swims with juggling these rotations as guys get healthier. All right, so why don't we take it to break here? When we return, I quickly want to close things out with a short spotlight on Rui Hachimura and his progression this season. So yeah, let's swing it to our sponsors first, and we will catch you guys after the turn.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so we are back. Tommy, let's talk a little bit about the Black Samurai. Or maybe we should start calling him the Black Shogun, because he's also starting to morph into more and more of a reliable, consistent beast. Shogun, by the way, is also a new show on HBO Max that you guys should also start watching if you haven't already. But anyways, Rui Hachimura. Tommy, it's been well documented to this point the way that Darvin Ham has yo-yoed his role around throughout the first half of the season, and the way that even when Rui Hachimura was fully healthy, the way his minutes continued to take a backseat to guys like Torian Prince and even Cam Reddish. But ever since Rui Hachimura finally got inserted into the starting lineup, and ever since he's gotten a more consistent slew of minutes, more in the 28 to 30 minute range, Rui has really started to come into his own and settle into a very reliable utility starter for the Lakers, who doesn't do any one thing exceptionally well, but someone who helps glue the starting unit together with his size, physicality, and offensive versatility. As a starter this season, Rui Hachimura is averaging 14.7 points, 3.8 rebounds, 1.1 assists on 58% from the field and 43% from three. In the month of March, Rui Hachimura is averaging a robust 17 points, 3 rebounds, 1.5 assists on 61% from the field and 47% from three. That's incredible. On the season, he is averaging 13 points, 3.7 rebounds, 1.8 assists. Even with his minutes and role having been jostled about through the first half of the season, in totality, Rui Hachimura on the year is still hitting 53% from the field and 41.2% from three, hitting 1.3 threes a game. This is pretty much Rui Hachimura's longest stretch shooting the three ball that efficiently and on that amount of volume. He did shoot 44.7% from three on 1.3 makes during the 2021-22 season, but that was only through 42 games. Rui this season has now already played 55 games and is still holding true to those numbers. And if you include how well he shot in the playoffs last season, then it's clear that Rui Hachimura's three-point shooting stroke is not a fluke, and Rui has really proven that he is at the very least a decent and reliable floor spacer at the forward spot. But I think Rui's stats only tell a very vague and watered-down story of how much he's grown this season. I feel like a lot of Rui Hachimura's contributions don't necessarily show up in the box score or stat sheet. And if you maybe compare his former years with the Wizards to what he's doing now with the Lakers, you may be sort of underwhelmed by saying, maybe Rui is just a 13 points per game player after all, like no matter what context he's in, and kind of be down on that. But I feel like you'd be missing the specifics of the work that he did this season if you just look at the points per game, because I think he has made vast improvements in his aggression, especially attacking the rim and just always forcefully throwing things down, and been more effective using his physicality and making that be a part of his game and the Lakers' identity. And then recently, in the last month or so, you've seen Rui really unleash his dominant left hand. He's finishing layups in traffic with his left hand. He's throwing down one-handed left-handed hammers. He's absorbing contact and still finishing with his left. It's almost comical at this point how much he wants to showcase his ambidexterity. And then on top of that, he's just done a really great job sprinting down the court for transition buckets. He's done a great job cutting off ball and diving into open space for LeBron James, D'Angelo Russell, and even Anthony Davis at times to find him for easy buckets. He has been a great safety valve for the Lakers offensively in that respect. And so, yeah, what are your overall thoughts on Rui Hachimura's progression this year? Are you lukewarm on it? Are you actually encouraged by it? I think his rebounding, for whatever reason, will never be a thing for him. And it's my opinion that if you give Rui Hachimura Christian Wood's rebounding acumen and know-how, he'd probably be a fringe all-star, but that's besides the point. I think Rui is always just going to be, like, at max a 4.5 rebounds per game type player. But I think what he's shown this year in terms of providing that physicality, aggression, bully ballness, but in conjunction with his ability to just hit that smooth, slithery mid-range jump shot and add some skill to things, I think that has helped glue the Lakers together, because Rui is like a jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none forwards that the Lakers can just rely upon to, yeah, give us some offense, but at times in the perfect situations, also give us some really good defense as well. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Rui Hachimura thus far?
So I kind of agree with pretty much everything you said, especially like the part about, like, if you haven't been watching the games closely and just looked at the numbers, like, he's not doing anything different than he did with the Wizards. But impact-wise, it has been a huge difference. I mean, obviously, he's continued his success from the end of last season and as a perimeter shooter. I think the problem with Rui, though, really, on this roster, is he's not getting the usage that he needs to show us how much he's developed.
Yeah.
He's still only 26 years old. He's not even entered the prime of his career yet. He put in a ton of work, and this was supposed to be the step year. And because he hasn't gotten that usage, we haven't seen him make that step. And I worry that we end up trading this guy before he does get the chance to make that step, because maybe they just decide that the fit with LeBron and AD is too clunky and they can't make it work. I clearly think there are ways to make it work. It's up to the coaching staff to figure it out. But I think overall he's had a great, great season. For all the people who thought like, oh, the shooting would regress, he'd end up being sort of the same perimeter player, he's always been mediocre defense, etc., he's made significant strides in some areas, and if you've watched the games, you've seen those strides. I just think that he needs that next step, which is getting him a little more usage, and we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah, and actually, credit to him, because he's like the, what would you say, fourth or fifth guy on this team, and he's pretty much averaging the same amount of points that he averaged as a rookie or sophomore on the Wizards he was like the first or second guy on the team, right? So
you just look at the season, right? Like going into, I mean, and granted he was injured, but November he played 26 minutes a night. December he played 24 minutes a night. January he played 21 minutes a night when Darvin was like on one, right? And then all of a sudden, he's playing 31 minutes a night in the month of February and averaging 15 points, 5 boards, shooting 44% from 3, 56% from the field. Like, he's able to put up the numbers when he gets the minutes and gets the usage. Now, it's not going to be every night, and it doesn't have to be every night, by the way. But we need to continue making this guy like a key part of what we're trying to do, because he's that good, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we've seen in clutch time situations, like for whatever reason, Rui shows up to the big moments. It's crazy that that's a thing, but it has been in his time as a Laker, like hitting clutch shots, making clutch buckets, driving to the rim. He's done a really good job of putting the ball on the floor and bumping guys off with his broad shoulders and finishing in the lane. And yeah, he's a great post player, obviously. When we need a bucket with the shot clock winding down, you can throw it to Rui and know that he, again, I don't want to make the Kawhi comparison, but it is Kawhi-like in the sense that somehow, some way, if you throw it to Rui with 5 seconds left, he's going to find his spot in the mid-range and at least put up a good-looking shot that gives you a chance, you know? So that's pretty impressive for a guy of his size. And it's been, yeah, it's just been a pleasure to watch him grow with the Lakers this season. And it's just been unfortunate what has happened early on to kind of stunt him. And also just unfortunate that just circumstantially, he's not on a LeBron James, Anthony Davis, D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves team. He's not necessarily going to get the chance to show how he's improved on paper statistically. But just know that we have acknowledged Rui Hachimura's improvement and progression this season, and we think he's going to play a big part in how far the Lakers go this season as well, like he did last season. So, yeah, Rui Hachimura, ganbatte kudasai, and keep it going. I don't know why I said it in that voice. Not trying to be racist. I am Asian, too. Not that that makes anything okay. Anyways, that's it for Rui Hachimura. So yeah, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. As usual, please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. Also give us 5 stars on the Spotify platform as well. We would greatly appreciate it again. And with that said, Tommy, I will catch you later.
Peace.
Peace.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.